AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Financial conditions in farming are changing, and so are attitudes. We'll get the latest on attitudes about farming in the Ag Economy Barometer. But first, we'll get updates on the Senate's version of the Farm Bill, gain perspective on Prop 12, and we might learn a thing or two about the current state of U.S.-China relations.
Live from D-Day via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa. Then we'll talk with Dr. Jim Mintert from Purdue. And later, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. Right after the news, Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, now the host of AgriTalk, Jeff Flory.
All right. That sounds a little ominous there,
Davis. A little ominous?
Huh? Yeah. D-Day, is it Davis Day?
No.
No?
Today was the day in 1944 when Allied troops stormed the beach at Normandy, bringing the United States into ground conflict in World War II.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Thank you for that. We've got Flag Day coming right up, too, don't we?
Yeah, yeah. Lots of... starting at Memorial Day, lots of opportunities to just reflect on the sacrifices of our troops from days gone by.
That's right. Thank you for doing that. All right. Welcome to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That is Davis.
Hello.
Boy, did you get a chance to look at the Ag Economy Barometer that was released earlier this morning?
Yeah. I believe the word was sour.
Yeah.
The sour came up.
Yeah. Attitudes are souring.
Yes.
Yeah. We have, obviously, that is going to be a theme of the show as we go through. We're going to have Karen Bonert in here pretty soon talking about what's going on with the milk market and how that's having an impact out on dairies. At the end of the show, Jennifer Scheich is going to help us continue the conversation that we started yesterday with Scott Brown from the University of Missouri about the financial conditions out there. Yeah. So we've got a lot of ground to cover today, no question about it. But first, news, weather, sports, market updates, and community information are just a few of the reasons that more than 80 million Americans depend on radio and AM radio specifically. Why do you listen? Let us know. Go to whyilisten.com. to tell us, and if you do, you could win $500. All right, Davis, what do you got in the news?
Well, buddy, let's start with highlights from USDA's crop progress and condition update. This as of June 4, corn, 96% planted, 85% emerged. Both of those figures are solidly ahead of the five-year average pace. 64% of the corn crop rated good to excellent. That's down from 69%. Last week, I don't like that good to excellent rating coming down, Chip.
Oh, and it's because of the dry conditions. I mean, even in eastern Iowa, as I talked about yesterday, driving around, it's pretty easy to spot the stresses that are out there. Got a note from a gentleman that was on a farm in central Nebraska, just left the farm this morning, and the farmer was starting his sixth rotation on the pivot. It's only the second time in his 50 years of farming that he has started the pivots before June 1.
Well, it's a similar deal on soybeans, 91% planted, 74% emerged, both of those marks ahead of the five-year average. 62% good to excellent, that's down from last week on the soybeans as well. Mm-hmm. Cotton, 71% planted, 6% squaring, 51% good to excellent. Spring wheat, 93% planted, in line with average. 76% emerged, 64% good to excellent. And winter wheat, 82% headed, 4% harvested, 36% good to excellent. That actually improved a little bit from last week on that good to excellent rating.
Well, there's a ton of rain that's falling out there, and it might make the wheat look better, but it's creating all kinds of different issues with the different believe it or not, some wheat is sprouting. Mm-hmm. Seed that was sitting in the ground is finally sprouting. So it's nuts.
Well, USDA Trade and Foreign Ag Affairs Undersecretary Alexis Taylor Monday launched an agribusiness trade mission to Japan. The U.S. delegation includes representatives from 11 state departments of ag, numerous farm organizations, and 40 agribusinesses looking to connect with future business partners in Japan. Alexis Taylor, all over the place, man.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so this is why it is important for Secretary Vilsack to have all the offices filled. And we waited almost 2 years to get Alexis Taylor into position, but she's doing the job now.
Yep. Well, a major dam in southern Ukraine was destroyed today, leading to mass evacuations and concerns about extensive damage. While Ukrainian intelligence officials blame Russian forces for the destruction, Moscow denies any involvement. The act has been characterized as ecocide by an official in Kyiv, implying international environmental destruction.
Turns it up another notch is what it just did.
Yep. With the summer driving season now underway, the nation's average price of gasoline declined to 3.9 cents from week ago to $3.51 per gallon. The national average diesel price fell 3.4 cents last week and is $3.88 per gallon. However, Gas Buddies Patrick DeHaan warns OPEC could change the course of fuel prices this summer. And finally, the EU extended the ability for Bulgaria, Hungary, Poland, Romania, and Slovakia to restrict imports of certain ag products from Ukraine until September 15. This is in response to the five countries' request, as they argue the influx of Ukrainian products was making domestic production unprofitable. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Karen Bonert, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. Good morning, Karen.
Hi, Chip.
A little bit of strength in futures, Class 3 milk futures this morning, but these prices are not doing anything to support the dairy industry.
Absolutely not. You know, a year ago, we were $9 higher, if that puts it in perspective. So, yeah, the producers are dealing with these less than stellar milk prices. Unfortunately, Chip, they're here to stay for a while. And last year, with that $25 plus per hundredweight milk price, you know, producers kind of had some optimism. But this is a cycle. We've seen it decades after decades. I'd say it's a sickening cycle. And, Chip, I'm hearing reports of milk being dumped in the upper Midwest simply because there's too much milk on the market. And what we know is a small positive change in that milk production report has a big impact on milk price. So what's driving prices low? It's a multiple of factors. You know, again, that swing in milk production, both in the United States and Europe, going from negative to positive impacts that price of milk. The domestic demand is soft. We are feeling that inflation price in the grocery stores. We have felt that. The export markets are really being challenged right now. And I would say that China's internal milk production is up. The stockpiles are elevated and their demand really is relatively soft. So I know this is kind of a doomsday report, but honestly, Chip, this is the reality dairy producers are faced with right now. And so we're going to be waiting out to see if there's a government cheese box program that transpires or whatever they end up calling it. And as we know, I would say we shouldn't have to rely on the government to rally our industry, but the last food box program during the pandemic did give milk price a boost as it did move dairy products.
Yeah. Yep. All that as we kick off celebration of June Dairy Month.
I know. Have that extra scoop of ice cream. Help us dairy producers out.
That's right. Karen, thank you so much. We'll continue to cover what's going on in the dairy industry for sure. Just go to dairyherd.com. All right. We've got Senator Chuck Grassley next here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Clarifly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us this morning. Davis, let's get right to it. We've got Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa on the line. Senator Grassley, welcome back to AgriTalk.
How are you doing? I'm glad to be with you. I like to talk farming with you.
Well, we're back to that time of the year, Senator. We've got to get a crop update from you. How's the corn and soybean crops looking?
Well, it looks pretty darn good, but it's not going to look very good if we don't soon get rain. I put out my rain gauge on May the 1st every year, and we had 2.25 inches, 2 4/10 inches the first week of May. And we normally would get 5 to 6 inches during May. Mm-hmm. And I did get a 0.5 inch last Thursday and 0.2 inch on Sunday, but we're way behind what we ought to normally have. And we've got to have rain. And if you'd look at the drought monitor for the state of Iowa, you'll still find in Monona and Woodbury County extreme drought. Then in western Iowa, moderate drought. And if you include my Butler County and Franklin County and Bremer County, there's another moderate drought area there. And then the rest of the state is whatever you want to call it.
Abnormally dry.
Dry, I guess, yep, is the words they use. And you go, you've got 5 or 6 counties along the Minnesota border. In, yep, northeast Iowa is the only place where they don't have a problem. And that's right. Not good for our corn and soybeans.
No, not at all. Even at this time of the year, it can be doing some yield damage. So we'll continue to keep up with that. That is for sure. Senator, it is Pork Week here at Farm Journal. We are going to be at the Pork Expo Wednesday and Thursday this week down in Des Moines. Hog industry is dealing with some tough financial headwinds and also trying to prepare for implementation of California's Prop 12. First off, your reaction to Prop 12 and the Supreme Court decision, and should Congress take on Prop 12 and pass legislation that prevents one state from telling any other state how to run its business?
The answer is yes, and this week there's an answer to it that's similar to a bill that was in last year being reintroduced, led by Senator Marshall of Kansas. I think Ernst and Grassley will be on it. I think it'll be a bipartisan bill, and hopefully that passes. And it follows along the lines of what we know we can do to satisfy the Supreme Court, because the majority opinion, 5-4, was written by Gorsuch. And he said they were approving what California was doing, because the United States Constitution gives Congress the power to regulate interstate and foreign commerce. And we hadn't passed any legislation in this area. And I get the idea that he was saying, in a sense, why should the Supreme Court step in and stop California from doing it, when Congress has the authority to override it if they want to regulate interstate commerce? And I do want to regulate interstate commerce. In fact, it's one of the basic reasons why the Constitution was written in the first place. We had 13 independent countries in the sense of 13 colonies that had become independent of England. And they were keeping commerce out even among those 13 colonies. So the Constitution, yeah, was written to give Congress the authority to do it. So among those 13 colonies and now among the 50 states, one state can't keep out commerce from another state.
Yeah,
it seems to me to be reasonable, and it seems to me that that's the reason Congress needs to act in the case of California Prop 12. And that's what we're going to do this week, at least start the process.
Good.
Now, will we get it done? I don't know, because we're up against the human rights or animal rights organizations. Animal rights organizations that likes what California is doing.
Mm-hmm. I am glad to hear you worked up about this, Senator. It sounds like it's coming in a standalone bill, but is it better as a standalone bill, or should it be included in the farm bill?
If it's included in the farm bill, it'll become law for sure. And I hope it will be included in the farm bill. And I would think we'd have enough votes in the Agriculture Committee to keep it in the farm bill. And once it gets in the farm bill, I doubt if it'd have 51 votes to kick it out.
Right, right. I go both ways on this, because on one hand, I think it's an issue that should be debated on its own merits and get the attention of a single, legislative bill. On the other hand, I want to see it done, and farm bill might be the best path. Are you satisfied with the progress on farm bill right now?
No, but I can understand why not much was done now. But what we finished at 10:30 Thursday night, avoiding a default and having a top line for what money's going to be spent 2024, we have a figure now that we can work with for the ag bill. I don't know what that figure is, but we'll be able to get a figure now, and it's going to be easier to write a farm bill when we know how much money we can spend in it.
Mm-hmm. Is there time to get it done before September?
When the chairman of the committee said she didn't think it'd be out of committee until September, I think that's difficult. If it could be done yet this year, I think it'd be okay. But if it isn't, we're going to have to extend the existing farm bill for 1 year to get us through the 2024 crop year.
Right, right. Okay. U.S. Trade Rep Catherine Tai has requested a USMCA dispute settlement regarding Mexico's ban of GMO yellow corn for human consumption. What's your reaction to that?
I applaud her for doing it, but she's about a year late. You know, we spent since December 2020, this has been a problem with Mexico. We talk and talk and talk and talk, and nothing happens. And now here we are 3 years later, trying to do something about it. I'm applauding her for taking the action she's taken now, but it should have been instituted a long time ago.
Okay. You have seen U.S.-China relations chill and warm several times during your time in Congress. How do you describe the current relationship between the U.S. and China?
Well, both economically and militarily, it's not very good. I'm more concerned about military aspect, not so much because what China might do right now, but that we could have some accident over there. Like, you know what's going on in the Taiwan Straits now, where these Chinese airplanes are coming close to our airplanes, or their ships are coming close to our ships. There could be something accidentally happen there, and you could start a military conflict as a result of it. And our governments aren't talking like we should be talking. Like, for 50 years between the Cold War with Russia, we always had communication that involved military matters that would avoid setting off a intercontinental ballistic missile to the United States, or from the United States to Canada, to Russia. And so that worries me. Economically, they're irritated because we want to bring some of our manufacturing home. They're irritated because we want to stop them from developing a semiconductor chip industry. Things of that nature, but they're still And in the meantime, they're retaliating by being tougher on our American businesses there, doing business there. So it's very troublesome.
Some of the tariffs that the U.S. have on Chinese goods are being reevaluated. Should those tariffs be lifted?
Well, I'm a free trade guy, so I don't like tariffs, but I think that I accept the administration's view that they've had for 2 years, that they don't want to take the tariffs off because they want to use them in negotiations with China. The trouble is, I don't see these negotiations going on where we can reduce our tariffs to get something from China. And as long as you aren't talking, that isn't a possibility. So in the meantime, the American consumer is being hurt by the tariffs because they're, you know, everybody, including Trump, bragged about bringing money into our federal treasury from tariffs, but there's no free lunch. American consumers that buy the products made in China are paying for that.
That's right. That's right. Senator, thank you so much for your time. Good luck. We will talk again soon. Thank you.
Okay, goodbye.
All right. That is Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa. Let's get this Prop 12 issue settled. He wants to do it. Let's get some momentum behind it. Jim Minter, next.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, some strength in corn and soybeans.
Yeah, so crop condition ratings came in lower than expected, so they dropped for corn more than what was anticipated. The initial ratings for soybeans came in lower than anticipated, and that's given both of those markets support here. You know, obviously, it's dried out quite a bit across the Corn Belt, and we'll have to see, but I think that it isn't overly concerning at this early stage in the growing season, aside from the fact that now we need timely rains as we move through the growing season. And so that'll be the focus, you know, through the rest of June, July, August, even into early September, probably, is the timeliness of rainfall.
Yeah. Okay. The bridge in Ukraine, that had an impact in the wheat trade overnight, didn't it?
It did. It really sparked buyer interest in wheat overnight. We're still seeing the SRW contracts hold on to gains, but that's primarily because of the strength in the corn and soybean markets. HRW wheat, it's fallen. Winter wheat harvest is underway, obviously, and that's providing seasonal pressure. And it's really difficult for the wheat market to rally in the midst of harvest. And then spring wheat futures, despite lower than expected crop ratings, they're trading lower here at mid-morning as well.
All right. Another new high in live cattle trade.
Yeah, it's, you know, just kind of a broken record type of situation. It's a good broken record, obviously. New contract highs, like you mentioned, and the cash market just continues to surge a record high last week in the cash market. And the hog futures, they're trading sharply to the upside as well here at mid-morning.
Yeah, that's a good sign. Hey, Brian is going to be on the show this afternoon with us. So come on back this afternoon for a conversation with Brian Grady, Pro Farmer Editor.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
All right. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Yeah, Davis, the senator, yeah. Senator Grassley from Iowa, certainly seems worked up about Prop 12, and a lot of times that's exactly what it takes. We're going to have to take a close look at the bill that's being put forward by Senator Marshall out of Kansas, and who knows, maybe even try to have a conversation with the senator very soon to get the details of that bill that he is going to be putting forward. Similar bills have been put forward in the past, just haven't had the urgency to tackle it. And the urgency is clearly in place now to get the job done. Okay. Dr. Jim Mintert is the director for Purdue Center for Commercial Agriculture, and he is a professor of ag economics there at Purdue. He does a monthly survey of farmers, and the results are included in the Purdue CME Ag Economy Barometer, and he joins us right now. Jim, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Very well. Good to talk to you as well, Chip.
Yeah, you know, sometimes doing a survey like this is a lot of fun. Sometimes it makes you kind of cringe. And with the way that the attitudes are changing and how quickly they are changing, this is one of those times where it's boy, here we go. Tell us about the latest reading.
Well, as we talked about last month, sentiment was down quite a bit, and we kind of anticipated that. The magnitude was a little maybe shaky in terms of how sharp of a decline it was. The overall sentiment index, the Ag Economy Barometer, was down 19 points compared to last month. That puts that index 54 points below where it was 2 years ago. And so that kind of tells you the story a little bit there. And if you look under the hood, the index of current conditions and the index of future expectations were both down. Current conditions was down 13 points. Future expectations was down even more. It was down 22 points. And if you think about it, that current condition index is still stronger than it was a year ago. Future expectations is actually a little bit lower. And that actually tells kind of an interesting story, because I think what's going on is, from a cash flow standpoint, from a working capital standpoint, a lot of folks are walking into what's shaping up to be a difficult year here in 2023 with a very strong working capital. And that's being reflected, I think, in the current conditions.
Yeah.
But if you look at the future expectations, that's where people's real concerns are starting to show up. And what you and I've talked about for a while, it's this concern and this risk of a cost price squeeze, and we're right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Dr. Mintert, my read from this month's report is almost like survey respondents were just sort of throwing up their hands. They're exasperated. They're upset. A little bit of gloom and doom showing up here. You've been doing this survey a while. In a situation like this, when the results nosedive month on month, do you tend to see a bit of a recovery, a bounce back? Like, well, maybe next month things aren't quite as bad as they seem.
Well, I don't think we've been around long enough that I can make a definitive answer or provide a definitive answer to that one. But, you know, Davis, if you think about what's going on right now, I think this next survey, which we're going to conduct starting next week, we'll be collecting data, is going to be really interesting, because now we've still got relatively soft commodity prices, especially on the crop side, not so much obviously on the cattle, as you guys just mentioned, but weak crop prices. But we're in the throes of a weather market. And so I think that's going to be really interesting to see how that impacts people's perspective. You know, it's we're going to be looking at prices. We're going to be looking out the window of crop conditions. We're going to be looking about, you know, is there any possibility of any rain? So I think it's going to be very interesting not only to look at the numbers for this upcoming survey, but maybe look at some of the comments that people provide at the end of the survey.
Yeah. Jim, is there any significance to the index of future expectations falling below 100?
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, it's about talking about falling below the base period, and that financial conditions index is really about falling below that base period. And you know, if you go back to the base in our overall index, it was 2015, 2016, the last part of 2015, early part of 2016. And, you know, just to kind of jog everybody's memory, those were some challenging times, and especially crop agriculture. You know, we had the very strong period from about 2007 to 2013. 2014 was kind of a balancing point in terms of making a switch in direction. And then we got into 2015, 2016, things were starting to look kind of tough for a lot of folks. And so when you fall below that baseline, that starts to show some negativity there. And so if you think about what's going on, I mean, this is something we've been kind of anticipating in some respects, but the timing was always going to be uncertain. You know, we're looking at softer commodity prices. We still have relatively high input costs. We've backed up, obviously, on fertilizer and fuel, but our other input costs have not backed up at all. So we're stuck with some relatively high input cost. And then on top of that one, you know, we've got interest rates going the wrong way from farmers' perspective. So that combination makes the future look kind of challenging. And the only good news here, really, I think from my perspective, is we're walking into this in a strong financial position. People are walking into this in the, on average with very strong working capital, very strong current ratios. That's going to help manage that downside going forward. So that's the good news, is we're coming into this in a strong position, but it's going to be challenging going forward, at least the way it looks today.
Yeah. You know, the Farm Capital Investment Index slid again, down 6 points compared to April, pushing it down to 37. That's the lowest reading since last November. I don't think that's any surprise. But then when you look at what's happening in the used machinery market, Jim, those two things are counterintuitive. Nobody wants to make the investment, yet they are.
Yeah, the two things going on there. First of all, I think that Farm Capital Investment Index, it turns out, I think what that is really measuring is whether or not you can get a good deal. Yeah. People are saying, I can't get a good deal, therefore it's not a good time to make an investment. But that's not the same thing as saying I won't step out and do it. The other thing excellent to think point about here, this is especially true on the new equipment market. Mm-hmm. Our cutoff for people that we try and interview is an estimated gross farm income of $500,000 and up. And that's large enough that people are paying attention, that this is a significant portion of their family's income on an annual basis, but it's probably not the only source of income for those folks. If you think about the new equipment market in today's world, that's not a very large gross farm income. And I suspect that some of what we're picking up there is some folks looking at new equipment and saying, gee, I can't even possibly afford to step out and buy a new planter or a new combine at these prices. They are backing up, though, and bidding on used equipment and, you know, looking at some of the things that I think you've talked about with machine repeat in the past. Some of the strongest areas of that used equipment are some of the older equipment that's still in very good condition, which I think is reflective of that income factor, meaning I'm out of the new equipment market. I am still eligible for the good used equipment market. And that's where we're seeing a lot of strength.
Man, that's good perspective, Jim. Thank you for that. Really good. Okay. Talk to me about the land price expectations going forward, short term and long term.
Yeah, so the short term index did a little bit of what we thought it would do, and it's been in a down, or it's, I won't say downtrend, but it's been in a weakening trend for some time now. You know, if you go back to that short term index, I think it topped out in 2021 at a reading of just about 160. A year ago, it was at 145. Last month, it was at 123. This month, it was down 13 points, down to 110. I think you and I talked about this last month. I think last month was a little bit of an aberration. Last month, the index actually went up, and that was kind of a surprise. This month, we're back to 110. That's a little weaker than we were 2 months ago, but it's not down dramatically, and that's probably the better comparison. So it is softer. And if you look at the raw responses to that question, and I think at this stage, it's interesting to look at that because that kind of shows you the trend a little more. 19% of the people in the survey said they expect to see farmland prices go down the next 12 months. That's up from 14% last month. A year ago, it was 9%. A couple of years ago, it was only 6%. So you can kind of see the change taking place there. And only 29% of the people in the survey expect to see higher farmland prices in the upcoming year. Right. That's down from 37 last month, 54 a year ago. And I think our all-time peak was about 64 or 65.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, people are worried about the short-term outlook. Longer term, it was up 3 points, which is really kind of a no change from a statistical perspective. That's not too surprising. Again, I think it just reflects the fact that people are very confident from a long-term perspective, farmland is still a good investment.
Exactly.
But short-term, we could see some pressure. And I think You know, when we talk to the auctioneers, a lot of the auctioneers tell us that people are still walking into these auctions with very strong cash positions. Some of these auctions are still going for all cash.
Yeah.
Again, is reflective of that strong working capital. And that's going to go away, but it's going to take a while. And that might be 2024 before that really goes away.
Okay. Okay, real quick. We've only got about a minute left here. I guess it's no surprise that most producers view crop insurance as the most important thing in the farm bill.
Yeah, that's consistent with what we picked up previously.
Yep.
Although I thought it was interesting, more people chose crop insurance this month than they did last month. Now, we're going to continue to ask that question and see how people play that out. But this month, it was 48% chose crop insurance. Last month, it was 40%. Commodity programs actually went down a little. They were 25% this month. 31% chose that last month. So that little trade-off is interesting. And then that follow-up, when we ask people what's going to happen with respect to, or what they think is going to happen with respect to Congress changing PLC reference prices. And I think it's interesting that almost half, 45% of the people in the survey think Congress is going to boost those PLC prices. We'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, they're going to need some more money if they're going to get that done, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, could be difficult. Jim, always a fascinating conversation with you, man. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity. Look forward to next month.
Absolutely. Dr. Jim Minter, Director for Purdue Center for Commercial Agriculture. All right, let's celebrate some pork week. Jennifer Shike is next here on AgriTalk.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Glad that you're with us this afternoon. Davis Michelson, we are efforting to track down Jennifer Shike, but I'm guessing she must be like rounding up pigs, you know, something, trying to herd hogs.
Yeah.
So
it's not everybody that can just sit around talking on the radio every day.
That's right. That's exactly right. So we will be with Jennifer later this week down at Des Moines at the World Pork Expo. Stop by the Farm Journal Pork booth. We're going to be broadcasting three times from the Farm Journal Pork booth. So looking forward to seeing Jennifer down there. We'll get her on the air. Don't worry. We'll talk about what's going on with Pork Week. First, Davis, what did you make of the land value outlook that was in the survey? You know, shorter term, a little negative on the outlook. Mm-hmm. But longer term, it's still farm ground. If you get a chance to buy it, buy it.
You're going to buy
I think that's the attitude, right?
Well, definitely. That's kind of always been the case here. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the short-term farmland value expectations index. Last month, a 123. This month, a 110. Dude, that is a steep fall off. I'm glad that he addressed that a little bit, although I'm still not sure I have a good handle on why we went so high last month and then sort of resumed what looks like a fairly orderly downtrend in expectations for farmland values that started, I don't even know when that bar is from.
Hey, last month when that survey was done was when the talk of a pause in the Federal Reserve monetary policy of raising interest rates just started. We just started to talk about the pause. I think that may have influenced last month's numbers to get that bit of a bump. And now there's more and more talk that, okay, even if we do pause, it doesn't mean interest rates are coming down anytime soon. And maybe that's being reflected in the shorter term outlook now.
Well, and when the when you look at is now a good time to make large investments, the reasons behind many saying no is, according to the survey here, you've got they're concerned about increases in machinery prices and new construction and rising interest rates. Those two are almost neck and neck on the list of major concerns why someone wouldn't be making a large investment this month.
Right.
But he kind of clarified that, too. It's not necessarily that you wouldn't do it. You just kind of don't want to have to at these price levels. And I think that's an important distinction in our conversation.
Yep.
Not
exactly.
That you can't. You just kind of don't want to spend that for, you know, fill in the blank.
Right. Exactly. Okay. What else you got going on, dude?
Well, it's too bad we can't get Jennifer. There's so much to talk about in the hog industry right now. I don't know if it's – I don't want to be doom and gloom. Not a lot of good news. Here's a piece of good news. June lean hog futures up $1.95, 87.27 this morning. Go out to the August, you're up 257.5 to 84.20. We talked to Scott Brown yesterday, and he was all about the volatility in the lean hog market.
You got
Prop 12. You got all these disruptions. I guess maybe is the theme in the hog market right now.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And even when you think about the economics of raising hogs and the fact that producers are, especially the farrow to finish guys, producers are losing money on hogs. The cost of gain, the cost of production on those animals is something that became tedious for the industry. And when and the producers, you know, you feeding high cost corn all the time, it eventually will have an impact on the bottom line.
Yeah.
And we are going through that impact right now where you know, we talked with Arlen yesterday afternoon about the feed demand number for the 2023-24 marketing year for corn, and he said that he feels like that number is overestimated by as much as 300 million bushels just simply because it's been high enough for a long enough period of time for that product to be reallocated to other areas.
Yep.
And that's kind of what is a theme, I guess, in the hog industry right now. And then Prop 12, like we talked about with Senator Grassley, what a disruptive factor. You know, Jim Wiesmeyer talked about it on Signal to Noise yesterday on the podcast. You can get that. It's on all the podcast platforms. Look for that. News and Markets Signal to Noise, and the attitude that Jim has got about Prop 12 and what the MPPC is doing, they are holding educational efforts to prepare the industry to be compliant with Prop 12. On the congressional side, we've got people like Senator Marshall out of Kansas and Senator Grassley out of Iowa that are preparing legislation that will hopefully be introduced this week that would address Prop 12 and override it.
I like that approach better.
The senator said it. it's Congress's responsibility to manage interstate commerce, and right. they haven't done it.
Nope.
It's time. It is time for that to happen. Wow. Dare I say beyond time. All right. Hey, thank you so much for listening this morning. We really appreciate it. You got to come back this afternoon for that conversation with Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady tomorrow morning. We're going to have a farmer forum from the Pork Expo, and we're going to have a conversation with NCGA President Tom Hagg right here on AgriTalk.